We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, guys? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. We have a pretty busy Thursday for you here on April 18th. We are going to share a couple different things. So the first thing I'm going to share this morning for you, as obviously there was some big Browns news yesterday, which we want to cover, uniform-based things and a couple minor roster moves and some draft philosophy stuff we want to get to. I'll probably link up with Andrew Spade a little later in the day today and have a additional podcast to drop. But I wanted to share a visit to the Dogs podcast I did. Those guys over there do a really nice job. I think you can find them on a weekly basis. I'm pretty sure they drop every Thursday. I've gone on a couple times. Nice guys do it, like I said, a really nice job on their production side and content side. And it's a podcast that you should check out, especially from a fan perspective. They do a really good job. And visited with them, and they had a lot of questions about offensive structure, the coaching hires, how Jerry Jeudy fits, how Deshaun Watson looks this year, and some of the things you'll have heard me say, but there's some stuff about the coaching hires, the rationale around them, I think make this interview, sharing this interview, worth it, right? You listen to me a lot. I don't get to be sort of the analyst very often because I'm kind of guiding conversation, and I miss that a little bit, you know, in terms of just what my natural fit is as sort of someone who covers the Browns. So I think every now and again when I get that opportunity, I like to share that with you guys because I could potentially be answering questions that you guys might be having on your own and I haven't gotten to them or whatever. Long story short, I don't know that I've covered the coaching changes well enough on the pod, and I don't know that I've gone through, like, post-watching, consuming Jerry Jeudy tape, I've gone into detail about that stuff well enough. It's just been a chaotic 5 months settling into life with two kiddos and, like, figuring out the structure of what it's going to be and some moving parts in my life have made. A lot of you have stuck around with me for a while. I'm not sure I'm the best version of myself covering the team right now, but that stuff it'll work itself out. More time will be created. We'll definitely be able to get, you know, a better structure in place by the season. I just think it's been a little bit of a wild turn to the 24 calendar year. And with that, I'm not certain in self-reflection I've done well enough producing enough content on these things that really matter for the upcoming season. So I wanted to share this with you because I think it's a pretty nice cumulative place to kind of hold all of the thoughts that I have around the coaching decisions and key personnel offensively. So that's why I think this podcast interview is worth your time. Again, thanks to the guys over there at the Dogs podcast for having me on and so sort of giving me a chance to yuck it up with them and get my thoughts out. So going to share that with you now. Again, there'll be more to come, obviously. Be breaking stuff down with Andrew a little bit later. But for now, listen, going to share this interview. I think there's a lot of good stuff here. If you missed it, put out a tweet today. Have a pre-draft mailbag I would love to do maybe over the weekend with any questions you have. I can get to those, give you a good answer, talk through where I'm at with the draft, prospects within the draft. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find somebody who knows it better than I do. So shoot those questions over, reply to the tweet, or send them over to jake@theobr.com. Or if you're an OBR subscriber, you can direct message me there. I appreciate that very much, guys. Now let's get over to that interview with the guys of the Dogs Podcast, and you can find them on any of the major podcasting network. Again, they do a great job. Thanks to them. Let's get to that right now.
So like I mentioned, we're joined in studio. Well, kind of in studio. He's in his, we're in ours. Very special guest today, Jake Burns from the OBR, here to tell us why we should be excited about the Browns offense and some of the coaches' hirings, or maybe why we should be temper our expectations. He's the one who's done all the research. We've just talked all the crap. that's why we like having Jake on. This is his second time being on the show now. So we're all obviously football fans. I feel like I know football pretty well, but I'm definitely not a film junkie. And it's nice to get a guy in here who I know is watched film and researched and done a lot of the research that I just haven't done and don't have time to do. And so we can get like an intelligent thought on this stuff and just not my dumb thoughts on some of our hires and that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited to have you back here again, man. We appreciate you being here.
Guys, my pleasure. You know that. That's anytime any you can have these kinds of conversations and help bring Browns fans together to think about their team uniquely, differently, in a smart way, I think is a win for everybody. So, you know, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So we hired Ken Dorsey a few months back. I know when we were searching for an offensive coordinator, he was a guy I didn't want because I just their offense was better without Dorsey. And they started winning games without him in Buffalo. So I don't want him. And then we hired him. And I was like, oh, what the hell? And then we started kind of like looking into a little bit more of what happened in Buffalo and a little bit deeper into the numbers. And I started to be like, well, I think they can do some good things with him in the passing game and with Kevin in the run game. What do you see from Ken Dorsey, what he's going to bring? How's he going to influence the offense per se?
Well, I mean, there's a couple different ways to look at Ken's hire. I think that what should be pretty clear and what you kind of want to delineate here is what does he bring to the table? In Buffalo, they led the league. We're one of the higher usage teams of RPOs, you know, with Josh Allen. That's not a surprise, right? Very quick decision maker, a guy who can really flick the wrist and get the football. The thing with run pass option stuff, it's like a popular buzz term, but you got to understand the logistics of how that stuff comes together. You have to have a quarterback who can make split second decisions. You also have to have a quarterback who doesn't have an elongated throwing motion, who can flip the football either to bubble screen, slip screen, slants, sort of some of those now square in routes in a very quick and accurate way. And not all quarterbacks can do that. Some aren't wired. You know, think like Russell Wilson, a little longer throwing motion. Some of that stuff comes from a more traditional pass set. Like it's just not in the cards for some of those guys, and that's okay. But you're trying to find a mesh for Deshaun Watson. So one of the things that I'm kind of drawn to when they hired Ken was, okay, it's clear to me that this team in Buffalo under Ken's leadership was one of the heavier usage units with RPOs. I think that's something Kevin started to sort of tinker with last year, but you can tell it's just not a world he's totally comfortable running. I've kind of tracked this over time. Back when Deshaun was the best version of himself, they were running some really unique run pass option stuff that was kind of catching the league off guard back in the 20 so long ago. Deshaun has put together a full season, but like 2020 season when he was, I think we could all agree that that's when, you know, you're making the decision to trade for him, because that version of that guy is like the reason you make the swing you do. But they were doing some really unique stuff with like some read flat wheel stuff, which I've wrote on the topic. If anybody wants to read it, if you search that in the OBR, it'll come up. But like, they're sending a guy, so they're reading a defensive end, they're sending a backside H back or tight end, some people call it a U utility back, whatever, different offenses label this thing differently. He goes to the flat, you have a wheel route from the slot typically, and you have a post route from the number one outside. And like, what it does is it gives Deshaun a chance. Hey, if we want to run inside zone up inside of that read edge, we're going to do it. If you pull it, then we give you three options to make a quick decision. And they were doing stuff that was pretty unique there back in 2020. And then Kevin, like the first game back for Deshaun in 2020, what is it, two? He tried to do this in Houston. They ran it like seven times. We all remember that Deshaun debut in Houston. It just wasn't a very cohesive offensive game. No. He was rusty. The team figuring out a different quarterback, different stylistic approach from Jacoby. And like, I felt like at that point, like everything was like, okay, let's pull back. Like we're going way too into this. Let's pull back a little bit. Let's try to, you know, finish the year. These six games, it was five games left with what we did with Jacoby, the traditional Kevin stuff. And we'll kind of delve into it in the offseason and really like figure out who we want to be. They don't really make any offensive staff changes the 22 to 23 offseason, right? They bring in Musgrave. That's the only offensive change they make. And then I'm like, all right, I'm optimistic that they're going to be doing more things I think they need to be doing, which to me, creating cheap yards has been a problem for the Browns, just creating easy pass to 4 or 5 yards that other teams are finding, whether through jet sweeps or tight zone or various different approaches. I think you can create easy yards, and the Browns offense was not very adept at creating easy yards through stylistic stuff. I was optimistic they'd make those changes. They didn't. They were largely who they have been with Kevin and, you know, Alex Van Pelt and all of the voices that were the same. Stump, we all know that. Callahan. And then this offseason, as you guys all know, and you're we're talking about here, the kind of bringing it back to Ken Dorsey, they're rewriting who they are offensively, a total rewrite. So Dorsey didn't call run game in Buffalo. That was their O-line coach. So when you're thinking Dorsey, think of pass game overhaul. So the big things to take away should be a larger understanding of RPO effectiveness, how to run it from all 11 positions, and how to implement it into a game plan that's functional, right? Not only do you have to teach them, when do we want to use this? What portions of the field? Do we want to use the high red zone? Do we want to use it on the plus 20? How do we want to use this? Is this a midfield concept? There's just the tendency stuff that goes into being a play caller that's really challenging, right? So with Ken, that's an element. He's a big options route guy too. I think a thing that stood out to me in research was Tavon Austin. You guys probably remember Tavon Austin, freaking ridiculous West Virginia stud. Been around the league for a long time. When he went into Buffalo and worked with Ken originally, he said this is one of the trickier offenses to play in because they're giving a lot of guys a lot of read the coverage post-snap and then be able to adjust your route to fit whatever the coverage is. If we're getting cover two, here's how your route goes. If we're getting cover three, you're getting an off corner, squat corner, press release. Here's how you're working your route. If you're a slot guy and you're getting the will overhang, dropping into the hook zone, here's how you have to work this option route. So that's something Kevin hasn't done. He's flirted with it. Think to at a very baseline level, try to call back on last year. Think about the, I think it was either Bears or Jaguars. I think it was Jaguars. Cedric Tillman runs a seam route against two safeties. He runs vertical. He's supposed to bend it in. Flacco throws it right to Eddie Jackson. So it was the Bears game. Kevin is like ripping Cedric Tillman right when he gets to the sideline. If you get two high safeties, you're supposed to break that route into the middle of the field, bend it. They call it a bender route. You're bending it in front of the safety. Flacco's expecting that. Cedric Tillman carries vertical. Ball's right in Eddie Jackson's lap. Those are the types of options. That's a very baseline vertical concept thing, but like Ken is going to push the envelope on that, right? So that is something that I would say to like the two things, varying route concepts with Dorsey that are going to be unique to things you have seen over the last 4 years with Kevin Stefanski, probably dating back to like trying to think of like who was before Stefanski, but not Freddie Kitchens, John DeFilippo. Remember that name? Yeah, ran the offense for years. It was an ugly team, but he was he leaned kind of heavily into that stuff. So it's been a while. Kevin has kind of brought this offense that Kubiak shell, which is meant to simplify things for the quarterback, get the most out of average quarterback play. Browns need to find a way to get more out of everybody. So they're trying to implement more of this stuff. And then with the other part of the game, the run phase, which is for me, like I would like some more tight zone, a little bit more Q read off of tight zone, be able to use the various different parts of tight zone to create options in the run game in terms of like how you're mirroring. Like the Browns have had a very boom or bust. They've been at the top of the league for 4 years with Kevin on chunk runs of 10 plus yards, but those negative and 0 yard carries, they're at the top of the league. That, you know, you guys know as well as I do, those second and 11s, second and 12s. Yep. So frustrating. And when Nick can't erase all of your problems in the run game, we got a fair idea of what that looks like just last year. This guy, Nick, is a guy who can recreate anything, take something from negative to positive. But even with Nick, the Browns in 21-22 were at the top of the league in negative zero runs. So they need to be a more now run team, which is more duo, more downhill run concepts, man kind of run blocking concepts, tight zone, double teams climb to the linebacker, create cheaper yards, create your passing game off of that. And I think they'll have a nice package there to mirror their run game and be a bit more varied. So that probably comes from Andy Dickerson, and you put in this the Tommy Rees element. And I think what I like about what they did with Tommy Rees and what they've done with some of these guys who have called their own offense in various places. When you call offense at Alabama, Notre Dame, you got to bring it. You got to bring it. You got to know it. You got to coach it. You got to implement it. The same way with the guy whose name, I should have come a little more prepared, but they brought in that young man from, is he from Rhode Island? I can't think of his name. He's a really good coaching influence.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
It's all good. Yeah, I should have come with his name, but I didn't. It's not very well known. He's run a small program, but he does a really nice job layering in very modern, RPO concepts. And they're bringing in guys who have developed their own offense to give answers. Because I think at times last year, Kevin's sitting in the coach's office and he's looking for answers from his guys. What can we do here? What can we do there? And he wasn't getting enough. So I think he's brought in a bunch of different opinions, a bunch of different guys who have led their own offense, bring a vast array of experience around him to say, hey, we're playing Pittsburgh this week. They're an odd front team. When you were at Alabama, you played Auburn, big odd front team. What did you like to do? Ken, when you guys were playing the Dolphins, odd front team, what did you like to do? How did you game plan them? And then meshing all that together, right? Because Baltimore, Pittsburgh, very unique odd front defenses. Really give the Browns some fits in the run game. Cincinnati, a little more traditional 4-3, but Lou Anarumo, he'll get real weird. He'll do some funky stuff. So I just think that like Kevin wanted different stuff. They did a great job with Andy Dickerson, given the tough situation of trying to replace Bill Callahan. Dickerson obviously made a huge impact on the people in L.A. when he was under McVay. Lasted from St. Louis, when they were the St. Louis Rams, all the way to L.A., made a huge impact. Anytime you're around McVay, you got that like seal of approval, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a great understanding of motion, how to tie motion, effective motion to your run game, make linebackers shift, move. We all know the Browns' Achilles heel defensively still just last year. These motions, shifting linebackers out of gaps, recreating assignments. The Browns weren't making it difficult enough on defenses. They're very much on their toes, and they still were able to find answers. We want the teams that the Browns offense playing against play a little more on the heels, thinking a little bit more right before the ball is snapped. That's what they're trying to do offensively. I like the Dickerson hire. Obviously think he had a big impact on Shane Waldron. Shane Waldron brought him to Seattle with him. Didn't even the first year have a role for him, just gave him a run game coordinator role without being the O-line coach because they already had a guy there. He's just, I need him with me. So that's a huge seal of approval from Waldron, who I think is a pretty good play caller. Then he ran his own offensive line for a couple of years, and he comes in too with a nice, understanding of how to work offensive line schemes. And I think the Browns could use a fresh approach to some of their pass set teaching. They didn't do a great job dealing with D-line twist stunts last year. I just thought that they were sloppy. Bill Callahan forget more about football than we'll ever know. But like, I think they could just use a different voice. And I don't think it's a huge crisis to lose Callahan. Callahan are very good, and Peters, really good technicians. But I think some of the execution stuff could be cleaned up a little bit. And again, different voice, different thought on how the positions are played. We'll see if it works out. I'm optimistic about it. I like the pairing, and I obviously like Deuce Staley, who is like a, he's an OG in the running back world in terms of getting it done and getting the most out of his guys. So as far as recreating a staff offensively and on the fly in one offseason, keeping your wide receiver coach O'Shea, who, from what I understand, guys, leads the red zone offense. He's kind of the guy who comes up with the game plan. Here's how we can attack them. Here's what they like to do. Playing, the Patriots this week, they love to sit in red two. They'll play 80% cover two down here inside the 20. Low red zone, they'll be a cover three team. Like they do some, I'd say he's done a pretty good job. So I think O'Shea's sticking around. Do I think that they could get better developing some of these guys at wide receiver? Sure. But I think that what they like about him is the general voice, game plan, structure stuff that he brings to the table too. So while last offseason I was pretty hopeful that they were going to rewrite who they were offensively, because I just think they need it. I think they needed a new approach to how they're going about this thing. 4 years, it's rare for us. You guys would agree, watching the Browns and having a single coach and play caller in place for 4 years.
It's like, it's unheard of.
What's going on here, man? Like, teams have tendencies on us now. Like, that's how it is though. So I think Kevin got to the point. He said, I want to run it back with my guys, but we need new perspective. We need fresh perspective. And I'm sure it really hurt him to let go of some of his core dudes there. He loves some of those guys, but ultimately Kevin's seat is his seat, and he's got to do right by his team here. And I think he's done a nice job of getting some minds in place to help him with that. I still think he calls plays. That's my hunch. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is, I'll put it this way. I could sound like an idiot, you know, in December of this year, but like, I would trust Ken Dorsey to call plays over Alex Van Pelt. Nothing against Alex Van Pelt. I just don't, from what I listened to, from what I've read, and all of the opportunity in various places, Green Bay, Cincinnati, Buffalo. And at Buffalo, he got a single year of calling plays because the guy quit, the OC quit right before the season. So like, you're just telling me all those different places you've been, nobody trusted you to do that. Like, not a single coach thought that you had the ability to handle that role. It just makes you sure. It just makes you like eyebrows raise a little bit. And I think that like a lot of people cling to that playoff game, and it's like, man, defense kind of gave you a 21-point head start in that ball game. Yeah. So I wish AVP nothing but the best. All those guys, nothing but the best, man, over in New England. I hope it works out for him, but I would trust Ken Dorsey to call an offense before him. So I think that, again, Kevin is, I know we're going to get to that, but I think Kevin calls it, but ultimately it's just a smarter modern group here, guys.
I really like, and I'm with you on the optimism with Dickerson for sure on the O-line, because he was the first guy the Browns brought in to interview for the OC position. It was like immediately when they knew they were going through this offensive coaching overhaul, he was the first guy that they made it a priority to get into the building to get that first meeting with that initial impression, because I think they saw the writing on the wall, if you agree with Bill Callahan, and he was already the guy they had identified as, you know, somebody they wanted in the building. And the other name that you were, I think it was Nick Charlton from UConn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bingo. So he was the OC from UConn. So we've got him and Reese. So two, you know, OCs from college. I think the offense is going to look very different.
I think a huge thing for the Browns, one of the biggest things you always hear about from Kevin detractors is, and I think it's made up, is his ego. He has too big of an ego to give up the play calling. He doesn't want to win. He just wants to win Kevin's way. I think the fact that he was willing to, like you said, it probably wasn't easy to let go some of these guys who have been with him the whole time and guys he's coached with in other places. But the fact that he didn't bring in a group of yes men, he didn't go out and find a bunch of other Kubiak style offensive guys to bring in. He went out and got guys who are going to challenge the way he looks at the game. They're going to tell him, no, I think we should do it this way. I've had success with this. I think this is like the ultimate sign that Kevin doesn't have an ego. He just wants to do what's best for the Cleveland Browns to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, you have no other way to look at it. It's the same with the defense over, you know, overhaul the year before, right? Like, there's no grand connection between Schwartz and him. He said, I'm going to interview people, and whoever I think is the best fit to handle this role is going to get the job. So, you know, we gave him a fair chance to rewrite the entire defensive group. And I think we would all agree did a pretty good job, right? Not the defense wasn't perfect, and certainly some things that Bobby Slowick showed him they need to work on in the wild card game. But like, that was a pretty successful endeavor. I think we can all agree. But like, I think with offense, I don't think the Browns offense has been costing them ball games throughout Kevin's tenure. I think they've been largely a pretty big net positive. And you look at last year and you're like, you know, some pretty tumultuous stuff going on there at the quarterback position. So it's hard to really base it on that. But I think that Kevin's desire here to recognize a flaw in their approach and say, hey, 4 years into this thing, I think the teams in this division, whereas some other divisions, maybe the NFC South, or again, many places where coaches turn over and move, like, he has now operated 4 years against the exact same coaching staffs on every team in the division. Like, they have a good feel for what he wants to do underneath the umbrella of a wide zone structure. So he is trying to create pivots, answers, schemes, and he can only take it so far under what he was previously running. So they should, guys. Now, the preseason game last year, the Hall of Fame game, they ran inside zone like 20 times in that game. And I'm like, all right, moving in the right direction here. Then they ran it like 20 times. Then they ran it like 20 times the whole season. So I, looking back on it, was overly optimistic because the DNA of everybody on that staff was built towards who they have been for 4 years. You rewrote all of that this offseason. So if they come out and a bunch of 12 personnel plus a sixth O lineman all the time, and they don't look stylistically different this year, I will be really surprised by that. I think it's going to feel probably a little bit like you're watching some Buffalo, probably a little bit mixed with what the 2020 version of Houston was, living in the gun a lot more, but not afraid to run and be the core part of your identity from running from the shotgun stuff, like less lateral run game in gun, which you guys probably as frustrated as everybody was frustrated. They do that. And that's the negative zero stuff. They would do a great job. They'd run, you know, GT counter and kick out and try to log up and through, and it'd work once. And then the next time the edge blows up the pulling guy, and you're taking a negative three, right? Like, those plays are very boom or bust, because if one guy doesn't get the job done, it can be a dead play. Whereas a little bit more tight zone, a little bit more downhill duo are very now hitting plays. And yeah, maybe they don't carry that 10 plus potential all the time, but they do carry a 3+ potential more consistently. And I think the Browns have probably, in Kevin's year-end review that he does with his, at this point, I would imagine did it with Deepa Destin, some of those overlooking the offense. Like, guys, we are in second and 11 plus way too often. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to rewrite how we do this stuff. So, you know, one 10-yard run that gets you out to your own 33-yard line, but then the next play is a negative two, and then you're second and 12, you're in third and 8, and then you're punting. And it's like, well, that looks like a nice, you know, you got a 10-plus yard run there, and you may add those up over the course of a game, and you had 5 10-yard runs, and you're like, all right, that's great. No, because that's not run game efficiency, right? Joe Thomas had the famous quote 7 years ago now. He's talking to the media about, like, if you run, you know, negative 1, 0, 1, 2, negative 3, 4, 75, your yards per carry might look great.
Yes. Yep. Thank you for saying
that. You hit a 75 yard, but that's not the same as being able to run consistently for 4, 5, 6, 5, 4. Those are how drives are built, because as a play caller, man, 2nd and 5, 2nd and 3, ooh, those are the whole thing is open here. The whole thing is open. So I need the Browns to figure out ways to create cheap and easy yards. And when you're in third and shorts, you have enough answers that it's not like, you guys probably would agree with me, you're like, my shirt collar's tied around my neck. They can't get these plays that they should get, right? Like,
yeah.
Think back to the Seattle game where they're throwing it off Jamal Adams' helmet, right? That's like a 3rd and 1. Guys, we got to be able to run some different schemes here, some different things they're not expecting that are still part of our baseline system here. Can we hit a fly sweep to somebody for 3 yards, just running lateral because they're not expecting it? Can we fake a fly sweep and run up inside of that expanding edge and walk up safety to get 3 or 4 yards? It just was too difficult. It's been turning too difficult to do the little things and create 3 or 4 yards. So I think that efficiency aspect is what they're looking to improve.
I mean, I did an episode breaking down the positional, you know, units of the Browns. And when I got to Jerome Ford in the running back section, and I looked at his total carries, his total yards and everything, I think his yards per carry on the season was like 4.6. And everybody's like, oh, he had a great yards, but you know, it's 4.6. It's not bad. He had eight runs over the whole season, just 8, that were over 20 yards or more. And if you take out those 8 runs out of his like 200 carries, his average dropped down to 2 or like 1.8.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like Jerome. I think he's a fine player. I think that you can only, I mean, like, again, when you watch Nick for 5 years, it creates like fan, I don't even know what the right stubbornness, like, why isn't this play going? Well, listen, I could pull up 25 Nick Chubb runs and tell you why this play should be dead right there, right there, right there. It should have been 3 yards. It turns into 37. Should have been negative 1, turns into 12. Should have been 17, turns into 65. Like, he is special. And it's hard then to go back and watch somebody like a Jerome Ford, who's fine, but you're like, God, this guy kind of stinks, right? Like, but I think that what the Browns weren't doing their running backs any favors. And I don't think they had the best collective effort up front. Obviously, the two tackles that they had, like, DeWand, we like him a lot. I think all of us do. Not a refined run game blocker. Was not very good last year in that phase. And that's okay. You can live in the NFL if you're a great pass protecting tackle and you're sort of a marginal run blocker. DeJuan, just enough times, he just overwhelms you with his sheer size that he gets away with some things. But like, I don't think that they were great up front. I think that they were also playing defenses who had a very keen feel for like third and six. What are they going to do? Oh, I know what they like to run here. They're going to run boundary pin pull. Like, that's what they like. Oh, where's the running back lined up? Kind of maybe two schemes they can run here. Like, the defenses had a really good feel for how they were running the football. So I don't think they did them any favors there. I'm actually really interested to watch Jerome, and some of the, and maybe they draft a guy too here and some of the varied stuff that they can put out there this year. Cause I don't think they did him any favors. And, you know, I think you guys would agree with me. I'm not sure Jerome mentally was like prepared for that. All of a sudden Nick has this horrendous injury and it's like, oh, hey, you're going to be a 200 carry guy for us out of nowhere. Yeah. So he's got to get his big boy pants on this offseason. I'm sure he's working on that. And some of these other guys, it's a good opportunity for a lot of these guys now to make an imprint, because it's uncertain if Nick will really be back in a meaningful way this year, at least until midseason.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, mentioned running backs in the draft. I might as well just hit that real quick. Have you been doing any draft prep scouting on any of these running backs? Or is there a guy you feel like would fit, or two or three names that would fit what you project the Browns to be moving toward this year?
Sure. I mean, listen, I've got a couple kids now, so my scouting time is not great.
Right. Get it, man. Get it. Yeah.
You know, I can't grind tape from midnight to two when you got a, with, you know, two, a 1.5-year-old that's going to wake up and punch you in the face at 6 a.m. So, those are fun.
I get it.
They're never ending. But I would say there's some guys that have been linked to the Browns that I think make sense. 54 to me, guys, is not a realistic player for the Browns to take a back. So you're talking about like 85, 156. So we could, like, if they're going early, a guy I would love is Trey Benson out of Florida State. I think he's got great contact balance, really nice downhill one cut vision stuff, good burst, can be a nice part of the passing game. I think if they went like 85, or if they move back, say, you know, and gathered a pick or two from 54 and whatever, he's a name early. You're talking like mid 156, or if they move up from 156 to like 120 because of a trade scenario, like Audric Estime out of Notre Dame. I know he didn't run as fast as everybody wanted him to at the combine, but he had a much better session at his pro day. Young, 20 years old still, like a lot of the boxes that they check, and he's really good at creating yards that are not supposed to be created. So a thing I love to look for running backs is yards over expectation, and he's a really nice player in that regard. He's a big body guy, but he also plays in a way that is less contact driven. So ability to shift the hips quick, kind of like not take the brunt of hits. But I think he's got that middle round, a really nice influx of like concepts of the brand. And obviously, Tommy Rees knows him, right? He's just one grade of separation away. Was Rees went to Alabama for a year, but there's a connection there too. And then if you're late, the kid I like out of Troy is Kamani Vidal, who is not a very popular name, but if they go in the 200s, he could last to the 200s. And I think Vidal is a fun football player, kind of like not as fast as Keaton Mitchell, the kid I liked out of East Carolina last year, is unfortunately in Baltimore, but really. I mean, the thing hips are shift very quick in and out of cuts, can sink the hips, can read process, not as effective as a pass blocker. Cause that, you know, again, you're talking about guys getting into the 200s, not a complete player, but a really nice change of pace back. And I find him to be an interesting prospect that they could be drawn to just because the testing stuff looks really good, very athletic, and he produced really well at the college level. And that's a huge thing. If you don't produce in college, it's kind of like you're going to produce in the NFL. So right. I think he checks a lot of boxes for them. So those are kind of like an early name I'm drawn to. And I think Benson has been mocked to them a few times because I think that's low hanging fruit for people looking at the roster. I'm not sure they're driven to take it back though, guys. I mean, I think they like Ford. I think they like Hines, giving them some change of pace and some receiving options. And then, I mean, Deonte Foreman is perpetually slept on, a guy who just continues to create when he's on the football field. So there's a possibility they don't add anybody there unless they just are in love with a player. And I think that I'm drawn to, as you only have six picks now and three of those picks are 200 plus, is like being a player in the running back UDFA market, like a real player, right? Like the last time the Browns got heavily involved on a real player was like Dontrell Hilliard, who I think Dontrell Hilliard turned into a really nice player. Unfortunately, that didn't totally materialize here, more in Tennessee, but I think like last year I was, again, just like Keaton Mitchell was sitting there. I'm like, what are we missing here? Like they should be a real player in that UDFA market if they don't draft a guy, because I think there'll be some talent and opportunity to collect somebody there that could find a role, you know, even with Nick coming back, that could find a role. So it's opportunity to be found there. I think it's like, hey man, going after UDFA defensive tackles, probably not going to bear much fruit, but I think there's a higher potential there to see a running back materialize into something than that. So hopefully we see them get a little more aggressive there as they're trying to fix that hole in this situation.
So a few weeks back now, man, Browns pull off like what I considered a pretty big move for Jerry Jeudy, a guy that, you know, I think that they've kind of loved for a few years now. They've kind of flirted around with Denver with it, but a guy that kind of, as overall for his career, is kind of maybe underachieved a little bit. What kind of expectations do you see as his role, as far as, do you see him being an outside threat? Do you see him lining up in the slot? And then like, what kind of skills do you think he can showcase in this offense?
Yeah, Jerry is fun. You made a couple great points there, which is really stuck in an unfortunate situation where you're like, I think his OC, his first 2 years was Pat Shurmur, I think. Like,
oh, woof.
So that's where you start. That's where you, yeah, right? Some bad memories for Browns fans. That's where you're starting. And then he goes to the dumpster fire that was the year of
Nathaniel Hackett.
There it is. See, you got all the answers for me. Nathaniel Hackett was awful, and that whole disjointed operation where the worst version of Russell Wilson's happening, and then you have whatever, you know, Sean Payton coming in and rewriting, putting his stamp into the organization. So I think the thing with Jerry Jeudy, and I've tried to mention this on my podcast, is he gets a bad rap because of who he was selected in front of, guys. Like, he was selected in front of CeeDee Lamb. He was selected in front of Justin Jefferson, and probably missing a name there. I think Michael Pittman was the top of that second round. But if you look at like Michael Pittman's production, and Michael Pittman has played without a question better quarterback play and better offenses, he's not far off of what Michael Pittman has done, who just got franchise tagged and is relatively respected around the NFL. I think with Jeudy, it's like, listen, you can't lean into the crutch of he's been in bad offenses, bad quarterback all the time. Can't do that forever. That can't define. If you're one of the greats, that doesn't define you as a football player. You got to overcome it. But you also, you got to be careful, because like, some of those situations were awful, but his second year was really good. Mm. Second year was really good, on the cusp of 1,000 yards, even missing a game or two. Like, I think that there's a good football player in there. He was, again, last year, I'm thinking his rookie year was a 900. His third year was his pretty strong season, close to 1,000 there. He was hurt his second season, and then last season was just like Russ fading away, throwing jump balls to Cortland Sutton all the time. Like, just, I don't imagine guys were having much fun playing with Russ. I'm watching every target. He's open relatively often. He did get some targets. He was missed sometimes. I think to answer the question of like, where does he line up and play here? Probably a power slot, a bigger slot receiver that can run some of those now slants and RPO stuff, can be somebody who can beat up on will linebackers or down box safeties. He can take advantage of those matchups, because I think they like, this is how I would envision it. He can obviously play Z. He can obviously be in the boundary and play X and play one-on-one. He's not a guy that can't beat somebody, walk down into his face and get their hands on him as a guy on the line of scrimmage. He can also get in motion from a Z alignment and move around, do different things, get a free release. The thing I like about him is he was top 10 in yards after the catch last year in terms of his ability to catch a football and get upfield and burst right away. I don't think his top end speed is elite, so he's not going to run by you all the time, but he can. The route nuance is good. It's not great, but good. Like, he can run double move routes. He can put those into practice. He can put difficult routes in place, like comebacks, you know, like a rail route to a comeback. He can run digs. He can do a lot of the complex route stuff you want. I don't think he's Amari Cooper, but I'll tell you what he'll love to do is learn from him and add to his game a little bit. I've seen people try to tell me he's not a route runner. I think he is. Like I said, I don't think he's in the top 2%ers of that realm, but I think he's good enough. And I think the Browns envision him as a guy who's going to get better in a place he's happy to be, can play a whole bunch of different alignments, right? And should be able to be a matchup driven target situation week to week, because you know Amari Cooper is going to get attention. You know 85 running it wherever he goes is going to get attention. Judy should be able to find outbreaking routes, comebacks, sort of those sail routes, double moves, slants, operate inside the hash marks. I envision him being a really contributor here. And the good thing for the Browns is they have a very ample outside receiver who I think they were misusing Elijah Moore a lot of last year. He is an outside receiver. He's just, the problem with him is he's an outside receiver in a slot receiver's body. So that right. brings challenges to how you use. He's best outside using the whole route tree because he's a very good route runner, but he can't really, he's not comfortable operating in the slot. Like, it was just a very uncomfortable experience for him doing that in New York and then doing it again in Cleveland. And when they put him outside late in the year, much better. And I think they're going to use these guys in a whole bunch of different alignments, bring Cedric Tillman into the fold when they want to have additional blocking ability. But I think Cedric Tillman, they want to keep developing him. Like, I see a world where they're going to play four receivers. And if they love a guy in the draft, they still might take another one, because what they are doing is, we know Jerry is going to be a part of this in 25 and beyond. So that tells you who they're going to target. They're going to give him targets. He's here for 41 million over the next 3 years. Like, they're going to give him target. They got to get their return on the investment. But if you want to be here, Elijah, if you want to continue to be here, Amari, all of these, Cedric, whatever, you got to earn it. And that's unique. I think we would all agree that the Browns have been fighting to find wide receivers to play at times. Now they're in a position where it's like, hey man, if you want to get on the field, I don't care if we took you in the third round, you got to earn it. So I expect Jerry to be, because I think he's just a nice receiver. I'm not here to call Jerry Jeudy like an answer, just a perfect answer. They are taking some risk. He might not be any better than what we saw in Denver, but he might be, because he might get the ball more consistently in places that I think he can thrive. And if that's the case, you're looking at like an 1,100 yard receiver, right? You know, the Browns have been fortunate with Amari Cooper's health and some of that stuff. So they're giving themselves options. I just think Jerry will be a focal point of what they do. They'll do a lot of different things with him in the slot. They'll move him around outside. And I think that they will, that you'll come to like him. I don't think the drops are an issue. He tracks the ball well enough for me. I think that stuff was early in his career, kind of like Amari's was early in his career. They got over it. You get over that, you move on. So I think that there's a really good place for him in this offense. And they eventually say, like, can he be a version of Amari 25, 26, 27? I think he can, right? Like an 1,100 yard, mm-hmm. 8 touchdown yep. receiver. And I think that would be the best expectation, right? If he's like a 700 yard receiver the next 2 years, that's a bummer. If he's playing every game, he needs to be an 1,100 yard receiver for your investment. And I think that that player is in there. If he, you know, finds a quarterback that can get him the football consistently and find him when he's open, that's something Russell Wilson wasn't doing. And I think that offense in general in Denver wasn't very efficient, not very long drives, weren't scoring a ton of points. We think the Browns are going to score. That's the case. He's going to be on the field a lot, should get 115, 120 targets. And I think that there's production in that, guys.
Awesome. I completely agree. I think I think a lot of people are down on Judy because what he was supposed to be, like what you said. I don't think by any stretch he's not like an elite guy, but he's far from bad in my opinion. Like he's a solid guy who can play very well in the right situation. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. Yeah.
I think people see Jerry as like less, not bad. I'm not trying to correct what you're saying bad, but like he's been average at times, and the expectation for what was he, the ninth pick,
yes,
is to not be that way. The question the Browns are answering here is saying, we think he was average because of his environment. And we think we're going to improve that environment and take him from his 2022 season, which was good, to being a great receiver. They're taking a risk. They're taking a calculated risk here, because if Denver felt the same way, they wouldn't have let him out of their building. If another team wanted to come in and offer a fourth and a third, he goes somewhere else. The Browns have been invested in Jerry Jeudy for a while. Those conversations have been happening, as we all know, for a year. Probably last offseason they started to kick the tires on this. So I think the Browns are saying to the NFL, we're getting in on this guy. We believe we can structure him up, put him in a better place, and we can get more out of him. That's what they're saying. Risk, sure. If it hits, that's a pretty nice dollar figure to have that kind of player.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system.
So we've kind of talked about adding all these offensive coaches, these different offensive philosophies. We've talked about Judy. I feel like the Browns, they might not be the Niners with Debo and Kittle and Ayuk and CMC, but they've put together a team on the offensive side of the ball. I think that because if they get high quarterback play, can be up there with some of the best teams in the league in terms of efficiency and production. That being said, with all the help that we've given Kevin with forming an offense, going out and getting a guy like Judy, what are your expectations from a healthy Deshaun Watson in 2024? I feel like we've given him what he needs. He's got guys that he should be able to elevate. He's got offensive coaches who should be able to scheme for him. What are your expectations for him?
He's got to be good. He's got to be really good. I mean, like, that player, the thing the Browns are trying to figure out is how do we bring that player back, the 2020 version, right? Or even the one before that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Deshaun has been on his own human being path. Whatever you think of that situation is not something that I'm here to comment on or care about. His path has been figuring out who Deshaun Watson is again. This guy who went from universally loved throughout high school, throughout college, throughout his early NFL career, to then universally hated. For right or wrong, universally hated. And that's hard. Listen, to any athlete who goes from being loved to hated, it's mentally a challenge for him. I think Deshaun, the quarterback, is more than capable. It's whether Deshaun, the person, is in the right place mentally. He's comfortable in Cleveland. He believes in the changes they made to this staff that tell us, are we getting a top 15 quarterback or a top 7 type of quarterback, right? Because confident Deshaun Watson shooting arrows, having fun, that's a dangerous player. We haven't seen that here, guys. We have not seen that confident version of him. And the Browns are spending all of their assets, both leadership-wise and roster-wise, to get that guy out on the field again, right? Deshaun has to do his part. He has to protect himself. He has to make smarter choices on the football field with the football at times. I expect him to be a 25-10 quarterback. You know, they're running it fairly well, but a 25 touchdown, 10 interception type, top 10, top 12 guy this year. And then he continues to build on it. Like, the ceiling for me, guys, is he's a top 7 quarterback. The basement has to be top 15. He's got to play 6 to 17. How many games he played? 17 games. He's got to be healthy. He's got to make the right choices to protect his health. Don't play recklessly anymore. You're not 24 years old out there, man. Like, you're approaching 30. Protect your body, live to play another down, and do what you have always done, which is deliver the football downfield to receivers that you process and find. Forget all the noise anymore. It's over. It's moved. It's, everything's done. I know there's a lingering case out there. I understand that. But, like, the story is written on that stuff. The only story you can define now is what happens with the next 7 years, 8 years of your career. So stop worrying about that, because it's over. You've become a new person here, so shape your football future. That's the thing he's got to do. My expectation is that everything around him is in place to be really good. And I think that everybody, Cleveland fans, should be expecting him to be really good. If he shows up this year and it's sort of that passive version of him, and he's running around and he's not believing what his eyes are seeing, and he's taking, you know, negative plays, and he's careless with, like, a football because he doesn't want to take a sack and he flips it back. Like, if he's doing that stuff again, we have to start to get concerned, because the only version I've ever enjoyed of Deshaun Watson's tenure anywhere has been that dude who is very confident, and he'll rip it into tight windows, and he'll throw the football downfield and give his guys a chance, right? And he's comfortable handling the football and doing different things, and third and six, running for 7 yards to get that first down, making things happen in the pocket, scrambling out of really tight. We saw glimpses, right? We saw the Baltimore game. We started to feel like, oh, this is it's still there. The biggest thing for Deshaun Watson is he just got to play. He has to play football games. He's played like 12 games since the 21 season started. That's jarring. Like, you have to play. Like, no matter who you are, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, these guys who have missed huge portions of seasons. Eventually, the NFL, it's the game's moving quick again because you miss time. So he needs to play. Stay healthy, play. He'll be, like, to me, the guy is still in there. The Browns have done all they can to put the things around him he needs. It's up to him. Yeah. I'm expecting a guy who's a top 12 quarterback, right? That's what I think everybody should be expecting. Now, he put 16, 17 strong games together. Next year, hey, buddy, let's reward this organization. Let's give them top 7 quarterback play here. Keep getting better into your 30s. That's got to be the goal here. So another year of, like, he was okay, and we saw, like, that's not good enough anymore. You're year 3. It's your organization. They've done everything they can to surround you with money, with the pieces in the organization that you need. They've helped you rewrite your, you know, personal career here. They've put faith in you. That he needs to reward the fans, and he needs to reward the people paying him the money, right? So it's all there for Deshaun Watson. It's whether the person is mentally able to grasp it and take it and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a ton during the season. There was just so many points in games where we said, again, just doesn't seem like he's totally, like you said, trusting what he's seeing on the field. He's not making the right reads, or you got a couple guys running wide open. It's like, why is he not throwing the ball to these guys? And some of that corrected itself as the season went on. And it, you know, we use the Baltimore game all the time as the example, but I say to so many people that that is the quarterback right there that gives you an opportunity to win any game against any opponent. That version of Deshaun Watson in that Baltimore game. I mean, a rough first half, you know, things weren't going our way, and it comes out in the second half and puts everything on his shoulders, and defense steps it up. He steps up his play, plays perfect, and we win the game. And that's something that not every quarterback's capable of doing.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, the Arizona game, there were some flashes where he's yucking it up with Amari on the sidelines, saying, hey, man, if they cheat that safety down and they want to run that bracket, just run through the bracket, I'll loft it to you. Like, he has always been supremely confident that I'm the best player on the field. Track that wherever he's been. When you start having that in your mind, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. And there have been moments here, because he's trying to get back into the swing of things. There have been moments he's not the same guy. So he has to practice, play, and get the confidence back. That's it. That's as simple as it is. Because when that's back, you don't struggle to process. You believe what you're seeing. It's cover two. I got a seam beater up the middle on Tampa two. I'm ripping this thing. I'm not worried about it. That's what he's got to be. If we look back and we're in November and he's having a great season, we're probably going to say, look how confident that guy is again. That's the difference.
And that's my hope with the Ken Dorsey. We talked about whenever we first signed him, looking back at when Josh Allen took the big steps, the MVP voting, where he finished like second and third, was with Ken Dorsey, Cam Newton. I mean, you saw those guys, and what did they have? They had that supreme confidence in their abilities on the field. So I'm really hoping that Ken Dorsey gets that back with Watson, helps him get more comfortable in this new offense that's designed more for him, and we see that confidence come back, because we need it.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head again with everything. He just got to go play football. And the only way to get better at football and to be more confident is to play football. You can't do it, watching film or watching from the sidelines. You have to be in the game. You have to be playing. So,
you can take practice reps. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're good.
I'll just say, you can take as many practice reps as you want, but I know I'm not getting touched. So whatever. Like, if I don't process it in time, I'm not getting sacked. You got to get on the field where the 300s across from you, the 250 speed burners off the edge are trying to rip your face mask off. You have to get out there and do it with live bullets. That's the only way you get comfortable again. I firmly believe that the player that we watched in 2020 is in there still. The thing is, though, he cannot keep missing time. That's the only thing hindering. The suspension hurt a lot because he missed 21 and then half of 22. And then they didn't really get a chance to implement who he, like, those six games were just like placeholder games. Yep. So just get your feet wet again. And then he gets hurt in the fashion he gets hurt. And then in 23, they need to just, like, the relationship of just doing this every Sunday has to happen. And I think if they do that, and we were talking about 2 years, right, of 34 ball games, sprinkle in some playoff games, God willing, and you're going to see the quarterback that you would expect it to have had when they traded for him. But I think the thing that I know I did, guys, when it happened and thinking through it and hindsighting it, he missed a lot of football. And I think I underestimated how hard it is. And not, you can't just always pick it up and run with it again, especially going from, I was the man in Houston. Now I'm in a whole new city, whole new staff. Everything is different from the last time I touched the field. There's a lot there. And then all of the stuff about his personal life, it's a lot there. Andrew Berry talked about it like a month ago. He said, this is a 10-year investment with Deshaun Watson. Maybe they bookmarked these first 3 years might be really challenging for him. Personal stuff. People don't like him the way they used to like him. New city, new environment. He's never lived in the North before. What does that do? How does he get comfortable there? And then a new structure, system, coaching staff. Like, to me, though, this is it. This is now, we're in year three with this. These next 3 or 4 years, you should be putting together some good football, and the Browns need it, right? And I think the fan base needs some consistency there too, and feeling like you know who you have showing up every Sunday, right? That's what they're doing. That's why they're chasing it, guys. You chase these quarterbacks that make you feel that euphoric state every Sunday, that no matter what happens out here, we have a guy that can win. It could go any wonky way, but we have a guy that can get it done. That's why you give him the money they gave him, and hopefully we see that version again, because I can tell you, I haven't experienced it much. You know, you guys, I mean, I'm covering the Browns. You guys are talking about, we're all in the same boat here. We haven't had it much, but when you got a guy that's dealing, it's a special feeling to watch and know that, like, doesn't matter. We can come back and get this done. It can happen. And that let's just hope that that's the experience that the folks that care about this team get for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years, right?
I know I need it.
I do too.
I can point at my dad and tell him he was wrong. No, way, man. Right. We appreciate you being here, taking time out of your night. Awesome as always. Thank you again for being here. We'll get you out of here. Go get yourself some dinner. Hang out with the kids a little bit before bed so you can start crunching more film. Again, thank you for being here, man. And we can't wait to have you back on again sometime.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. Again, thanks to the guys over at the Dogs Podcast for having me on. A lot of good stuff answered there. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Little twist. I don't often share when I go to other places, but I thought the content was necessary, again, for things I would have liked to have spent more time on. There's obviously still plenty of time. We can get to that stuff, but I think a lot of people have been desiring a little bit more in depth, and you got it there. So again, find those guys, YouTube. I think they have a channel there. Apple, Spotify, jointhedogs.com. Want to make sure I give them proper love, proper credit for putting it together and doing a nice job. So I always like to support Browns Podcast. You can find theirs, like I said, every week. So jump in and take advantage of another podcast perspective as you can. Put it in your rotation of Cleveland Browns podcasts. All right, that's a wrap for today. Thanks for joining us here. We had a bunch of great stuff over at the OBR. Things from Jack Duffin every morning about pick trading and you know, what it's going to cost to move up or down from certain slots they have. We had an interview with Mason Tipton, the Yale wide receiver the Browns had in to meet with. We've got things up on Denzel Ward's quotes to the media yesterday. And then we'll have plenty from covering Andrew Berry's press conference, which will come up again on Thursday as well. So we'll try to fit that into the schedule and have some talking points around that. And then we obviously need to spend some time talking about the gigantic release of the white face mask official yesterday and the gloss finish, which has the Browns looking like one of the best helmets in the NFL, as they rightfully should be. Once again, they got it right. Took a long time, but they got it right. Again, as I always say, thanks for being here. Rate and review the podcast if you can. That does nothing but help us in an immense way with fans finding the show, and you guys do a great job with that. So thanks again. If you haven't done so, please take a couple minutes to do it. Always greatly appreciated. Everybody have a fantastic Thursday. Be well. Check back later for another podcast, and you'll have one Friday. And then, like I said, mailbag over the weekend, and then we're in draft week. It's crazy to already be here. Appreciate you all. Be well. Go Browns.